et cetera, versus P. Garaga and others. William J. Owen III, Appellant Counsel, Frank K. Friesen, David A. Batten, Matthew E. Kelly, Nathaniel D. Moberly, Appellant Counsel.
You may proceed. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a vote.
I hope my colleagues will let you. And if they don't, I'll try.
May it please the court. My name is Joe Owen. In the case before you turned on the question, did the evidence we presented at trial show that a breach of the standard of care by Drs. Theogarajan and Levitt caused the death of Jackie DeBoot? Our position is resounding yes. Dr. Gonzalez, who is the expert that testified in this case, and I'm referring to Joint Appendix page 531, clearly stated that he was, and I won't read the full quote, but he stated the fact that they didn't do that, referring to all the things they didn't do to check the infection, and they did nothing to treat this infection. It was a departure from the good accepted standard of medical care, and it was a direct cause of her death. The evidence could not have been clearer. Prior to that, he had given extensive testimony about what Drs. Theogarajan and Levitt should have done at various points in this case. Pages 504 and 505, he testified extensively as to what Dr. Theogarajan should have done when he received the phone call where Ms. Taboo told him she was suffering from a temperature, having unusual pains, and yet instead of bringing her in to examine her, he simply prescribed nifedipine and Advil over the phone without ever looking at it. And I would point out, when he had examined her post-surgery, we were less than 2 weeks after surgery, on December the 20th, he didn't take any vital signs. He acknowledged that.
Can I ask you this question? One of the arguments your opposing counsel makes is that your theory was that, in addition to all the things you mentioned, she should have been evaluated and given broad-spectrum antibiotics, and that would have saved her.
Yes, sir.
And so one of their responses is, well, where's the evidence about whether Martha Jefferson had that, how long it would have taken it to be mixed, et cetera, et cetera. Help me with that point.
Well, Judge, and we're really talking about two separate incidents. Dr. Levitt on the 26th, when she calls in reporting the fever, he again tells her to take it, and Dr. Gonzalez said she should have been brought in, evaluated then, and started on the broad-spectrum triple antibiotics. We did not consider, nor did anyone else, how long it would take to have that. I think that's a throwaway argument. I don't believe that the fact that they hadn't done anything, in fact, they never considered infection by admission, by Dr. Levitt's admission and by all the records, that she was having an infection, even after her membrane ruptured. And then he only started on ampicillin because that was a standard to do when a baby's going to have with a ruptured membrane. So that whole piece of when they could have started the triple antibiotics, when they could have had it ready for her, really I think is moot because he never considered it. So it's a further breach of the standard of care.
But isn't it crucial to your issue of causation as concerns Dr. Levitt? Isn't that information terribly crucial to that point?
Judge, if he had considered the infection and had said, I need to do triple antibiotics, and they hadn't been able to get them to her quickly enough, that would be something else. But he never considered it. So I think it is it should not be a piece that says because it would be taking too long that and he just said he didn't know. Nobody said they could not have done it. There was never evidence that they could not have gotten triple antibiotics ready. The evidence was he didn't know how long it would take.
But isn't the problem you have concerning Dr. Levitt is, would it have made any difference? Because it is like a 4-hour window between when she got to Martha Jefferson as opposed to when she got to UVA?
Yes, sir. And Dr. Gonzalez, in his testimony, when you read his testimony, said it would have.
I didn't see that.
Well, he said they should have started the triple antibiotics when she got there, when he put the first call at 2:07 a.m., brought her in, started them then.
But he never said whether that made any difference, whether that would have increased her chances of survival or not.
Judge, I believe in his, if you read the first start of page 9 of page 8 on line 8 on page 531, he does say that. You have to get them on board as soon as possible. The whole cascade, the key is recognizing and starting antibiotics. That's what gives you the best chance. That's number one. That was his testimony just before he said it was a direct cause of her death at that part in the transcript.
Well, he also said that Dr. Levitt, quote, would have likely caught the infection and been able to head off the tragedy if he had acted at the time. Your expert claimed he should have acted. If he had acted at the time, your expert claimed he should have acted.
Yes, that's true. That's very true. He
said that, but then there was no specificity concerning that. And when your other expert was asked about it, even though the information was excluded, he said, it's possible. It's possible it could have made a difference if she had gotten the antibiotics 4 hours earlier.
Sir, I would suggest that goes to weight. And once, see, this case was, motion to strike was granted based on the Dixon versus Sublett case, in which the judge, I think, improperly applied it, seeing that there had been no evidence. And in Dixon versus Sublett case, the plaintiff's expert, who they were going to use as a surgical expert, had not been allowed to testify because of an improper expert designation, and so the factors of what should have been done were not present, and I think that was at the heart of Justice Powell's opinion in that case. And this case is very different. There are really two lines of cases, I think, that look at this question. The first line of cases are the ones we relied on, Brown versus Kowalski, Hayden versus Medic 24, Howell versus Sobhan, Whitfield, Howard, that whole line of cases. In all of those cases, the court ruled that the evidence should be taken in the light most favorable to the plaintiff in reviewing it, and that unless it's conclusively apparent that there was no evidence to go to the jury, the motion to strike should be overruled. And I don't think, in this case, I think the evidence was proper and sufficient for that case to go to the jury based on the testimony of Dr. Gonzalez. He was very clear in what he had testified to.
So your point is that if you use the lens of light most favorable, and an expert says, by not giving the antibiotics at the right time, it was the direct cause of her death, and if he would have likely caught the infection and head off the tragedy. Implicit in that is that the cocktail of antibiotics could have been presented, would have been presented in enough time to keep her from dying.
Yes, sir.
And he didn't need to repeat that statement because it's obviously baked into the very statement of if there's a direct cause.
Yes, sir. That's our position exactly.
And presumably a hospital of the size, I mean, this is not some country practitioner in his little office.
No, sir.
I mean, it's a pretty major hospital. So it seems mind-boggling they would not have had those available for use with some dispatch anyway. But again...
Yes, sir.
That's an inference. I don't know that there's direct proof of that.
I agree with that, Judge. I think Martha Jefferson is a some of the equivalent of the HCA hospitals here in this area.
Counsel, when we're talking about what was done or could have been done at Martha Jefferson, I have a question about page 605 of the Joint Appendix. And the question there, it's at the bottom, line 20. There were some labs that were done at Martha Jefferson, and there was a set at UVA. The Martha Jefferson was limited to, I think, a culture. Can you expand upon that? What should the Martha Jefferson labs have included?
Our position is that she should have been brought in immediately after the first phone call that Dr. Levitt took, instead of telling her to take the nifedipine and Advil and call us back if you don't get any better. That she should have come in then, and they should have done a complete spectrum of labs to check for infection in her bloodstream and see what was going on and run this battery of tests. Maybe even done the amniocentesis at that point in time. But they chose to do nothing until after the membrane ruptured. And what was interesting about that was they were just checking at that point in time. They did some standard lab work, but it was mostly to confirm that it had been a ruptured membrane at that point. So they never did any lab test, and I would suggest that and Dr. Gonzalez had suggested that the lab test should have been things that checked to see if there was an infection, including a white blood cell count. White blood count, he suggested that as something that should have been looked at as well to see if there was infection present in the bloodstream. And he had testified that the sepsis, he believed, was already present in the bloodstream at 2 a.m. when she first called in, and that would have been picked up at that point.
And on that same page, the testimony was that the infection led to the premature rupture of the membrane.
Yes, sir. And that was consistent both with Dr. Gonzalez and actually Dr. Sajati, that he said that, that the infection is a cause for the rupture of the membrane at that point in time.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
Yes, sir. 3 minutes and 16 seconds.
I will reserve.
All right.
May it please the court, I'm Frank Friedman representing Dr. Theogaraja and Dr. Levitt. Matthew Kelly is with me at counsel's table. This is a case that demonstrates the wisdom of this court's rulings in Dixon versus Sublette, Bryan versus Burt, and Fruderman versus Granada. Doctors face medical crises on a regular basis, and in the wake of an unfortunate, or as in this case, tragic medical outcome, patients, experts frequently, with the gift of hindsight, point to ways treatment could have been different or better. And against that backdrop, Dixon versus Sublette teaches that an expert doesn't establish negligence by simply criticizing the care provided. The expert must also give details about the care that should have been provided, its feasibility, and its ultimate effect on the medical outcome.
Well, did Gonzalez not give the details?
He didn't.
No, what exactly is lacking? We're at a motion to strike. We're not at an argument to the jury. What exactly is lacking to create a reasonable inference that if the cocktail of antibiotics was presented to her, she would have survived? He said that flat out.
Two things are missing for starters. I mean, really, about four things are missing. But what's missing is the diagnostics that would call for you to do the tests that he's saying. He's looking back in time, knowing there's chorio. He's not looking at what factors did she have that would make you give triple antibiotics when she walks in to Martha Jefferson. He doesn't say why or when that would happen.
Is the issue, should he have known that she should have had triple antibiotics when she walked into Martha Jefferson, or should he actually have come to Martha Jefferson or had her come to Martha Jefferson earlier and met her there so that he could then make that determination?
Two things about that. First, they argued at page 185, their opening argument was that nobody could have known until the membranes broke, which is actually, you know, a better argument. There's no way. At 2 o'clock when she gets there, or 3 o'clock when she gets there, the truth is, and the nurse runs through it, she is, the contractions have stopped, she has no temperature. That's a mandatory diagnostic. According to their expert, their causation expert, what are the diagnostics? A fever plus two things. She arrives at 3 o'clock without a fever. She does get a fever later. But at 2 o'clock, she shows up and she has no fever, no complications.
Hadn't she been already taken the over-the-counter medication that would have impacted the fever?
She has, but the factor, you know, you don't just willy-nilly throw antibiotics at people.
No, I guess my question is, really it gets down to at the very beginning of the causation cycle on that date, based upon what was said, should the doctor have said, I'm going to meet you at the hospital, rather than leaving it in the hands of the nurses?
Well, and what their expert says is yes, although I think it's quite common that the eyes and the ears of the doctor are the nurses. The tests were done. There were a lot of tests.
Those are weight issues.
Excuse me?
Those are weight issues.
Well, except that the nurse literally said, we didn't call the doctors in because the contractions had stopped and she was fine. And I mean, that's...
Well, that gets us back to what I was just saying, that she didn't have a fever because she had taken the over-the-counter medication. And, again, doesn't it go to weight in terms of... You're saying that based upon the way that she presented over the phone, the standard of care did not require the doctor to go to the hospital.
Well,
their expert is saying, well, the standard of care did. That seems like that's something that would go to the jury.
I think what we're ultimately saying is if the doctor had been there at 3 o'clock and she had been perfectly fine, no contractions, no temperature, no problem, they didn't say what should happen. And what they truly didn't say, and they admitted they didn't say, is, you know, those cultures at Martha Jefferson were taken after the membranes broke. They were taken on the 26th. They didn't come back till the 27th. And that was Martha Jefferson's, you know, best effort. They came back the next day. Everyone says, you do not give triple antibiotics and deliver a child on a hunch, on
a
whim. Are
we arguing two different points in time, counsel? It seems
true
to me their argument is when she called in the first time, reported a fever, reported all of the things that she said, at that time the doctor should have said, come into the hospital, I will meet you there, and that's when their expert is saying there was a breach of standard of care. You're moving it forward in time, and as Justice Mims has said, she's taken the medication that's lowered the temperature, and you're saying there was no reason for the doctor to report that.
I think that I'm not articulating well. I mean, we do agree that there's no evidence that it would have been a different outcome if he had been there. But we're also saying that it wasn't feasible to suggest that Martha Jefferson could just conjure up triple antibiotics on the spot when she walked in, or even later. It took UVA an hour and a half in crisis mode. It's not like you're handing out pills. There are drips, there are calculations, and there's no evidence. They conceded there's no evidence. Their experts said, I don't know how long it takes. And the window after the membranes broke was very, very short. In fact, you know, she was transferred. The call went to the ambulance at 6:15. They haven't sued the ambulance company that didn't get her there till 7:27. That's part of a delay. The nurse that said, don't come in, you know, they're coming after a doctor that actually behaved pretty heroically. I mean, what Dr. Levitt did is
even though after the membranes broke, it's probably Dr. Wolanski's job, he comes in, he gives two drugs that help save the baby survive, does give an antibiotic, does give ampicillin, and transfers her. And the culture is not back yet. What's being left out are two critical things from the other side's experts. And I really would like to address both of them. And the first one is that the main reason that Dr. Gonzalez was saying that people should come in, you know, immediately and, oh, you should be checking on this, is that there was a cerclage procedure and that might be part of the problem. And we know that's not right. Okay, we know that J1016 and 17 UVA says it wasn't from that. We know that the further out you are, the less likely it's from the cerclage. And we know that she probably didn't have chorioamnionitis at any time prior to the 26th because there was no fever. So, and it's unrelenting. It doesn't wane once you have it. So as we analyze those events and we say, where are the diagnostic signs? You know, the experts say you could do X or you could do Y, but they don't say what conditions called for it. Now, here's the key thing. Ms. Taboob is 24 weeks pregnant. You can't recommend treatment for the mother without at least taking into account the impact on her baby boy. So when you say generally you could initiate triple antibiotics, you know, on a hunch earlier in the day, maybe she'll develop chorioamnionitis, maybe she has it, you're very possibly giving the baby a death sentence. No doctor would do that, and I think that's why they specifically say, I'm not going to say when you should have done any of these things. You'll recall Dr. Gonzalez was specifically asked, would the treatment plan be deliver triple antibiotics on the 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th? He says, I don't know. So, and the UVA treating physician, Rozicki, says, what do? You buy time until you know that there's chorio, because every day counts for the baby. So, in this case, on the 26th, because I think on the 22nd, you know, there's just no evidence of what a treating physician, you know, that what the tests were, what the results would have been. The expert literally says, I don't know, in response to the 22nd. As for the 26th, though, what they're jumping to is that, oh, when she got to UVA, everybody knew what to do. Well, on the way to UVA, in the ambulance, she had a placental abruption. That is the critical problem in this case. With chorioamnionitis, it's not usually life-threatening. It's just you're going to have to deliver the baby. But the placental abruption is why she's suddenly bleeding. And that's why UVA is saying, you know, you've got to deliver a baby. But what's critical and what was conceded is that at Martha Jefferson, the culture that was taken by the doctor who then gave the baby and the mother antibiotics and drugs to help the baby, that culture didn't come back yet. There wasn't proof of chorio. And the factors, you know, if they have an argument that the factors showed up, and let me point you to page 375, that's where the UVA people say, consistent with Dr. Sajati's factors that he gives at JA 623, that's when she had the factors. They say, well, she's got a fever, the baby and the mother have tachycardia, and she's had foul discharge. They say, we're going to go ahead and assume chorio. They didn't say we're going to do it on a lark. And those factors weren't there at 2 o'clock. There was not diagnostic evidence, but there's also not evidence. There wasn't diagnostic evidence calling for them to deliver this baby and have triple antibiotics. But even more so, And
I thought Dr. Fajati testified pretty clearly that if treatment had begun on December 22nd, Jaffelin would have survived.
Well, that's just part of the problem. What treatment? He was not certified in OBGYN. He was relying on the treatment plan from Gonzalez, which there wasn't one. What is the treatment? What would have happened? He already said, I don't know if I would deliver triple antibiotics. I don't know if I would have this baby come in. He says, well, you could come in and have tests, but he doesn't say what the tests would have shown. And he doesn't say what the result would have been.
You've relied upon that on brief and just now. That seems to go one step beyond Dixon.
I don't think it does. I think it's a gap in their evidence. You have to show, you know, it's kind of like...
you have to show what would have happened if the defendant had complied with the standard of care. And I believe that their evidence is that the standard of care was violated and that the standard of care required antibiotics on the 22nd and that the antibiotics had been administered on the 22nd.
Sir, I don't mean to interrupt you, but that's just it. The antibiotics, ampicillin doesn't treat this. What antibiotics? I mean, do you give that triple? That's what they're assuming. They're assuming, yes, we'll give the triple and deliver the baby. And it is like a death sentence. Their own expert says, I wouldn't do that. I won't say. And that's what he also said, it's one of the hardest issues that a doctor has. And that's why this is a hard case.
We are arguing at this point a motion to strike.
True.
And what was required was the standard of care violated? The expert testimony is yes, it was. And if the standard of care had not been violated, if antibiotics had been administered, we're right back to where we were 2 minutes ago.
And you can
interrupt me again. But I just don't see how this gets taken from the jury based upon that testimony.
What is the test under Dixon? We think it is that you have to give details about the care that should have been provided, its feasibility. They have no evidence of its feasibility because it wasn't feasible. That drip, it took UVA on crisis alert an hour and a half. If when the diagnostics showed up at, say, 5:30, the first time she got...
Well, it isn't part of the violation of the standard of care that tests were not done on the 22nd because she wasn't told to come in then.
What she was told to do is call if there's a problem. And there wasn't. And that's JA 833. I mean, is the standard that as soon as someone says I might have
a temperature... Their testimony is there was enough evidence that there was a problem that she should have been seen. Is that not the case? I mean, I'm not asking you to argue their case, but their argument seems to be there was enough evidence on the 22nd that she should have been seen. And if she was seen, then the treatment plan that you correctly say is missing could have been developed. But because she wasn't seen, you can't have a treatment plan. And well, Dixon doesn't seem to require a treatment plan.
What I will say, a lot of Dr. Gonzalez's answers stem from conditions that aren't existing. I mean, for example, that JA 531 that they opened with is talking about if you're in septic shock. She wasn't in septic shock. But that's the problem. Dr. Gonzalez had a lot of broad answers. The answer to that is she did not have the diagnostic symptoms at that time at 2 o'clock on the 26th to say immediately we're going to give you this lengthy triple antibiotic.
Has he answered your question? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rebuttal.
It's interesting to me that part of the way they're arguing this case is that because there was no hard data of vital signs and those kinds of things in this case, that there was not a basis for Dr. Gonzalez or Dr. Shajda to make an opinion. it's interesting that they're relying on their own negligence about not bringing Mr. Boob in to have her evaluated and examined, which if they had followed the standard of care, all of that information that they claimed was lacking would have been present for everyone. And that's both on December 22nd after the call and on the 26th when she first called into Dr. Levitt. It's also interesting to note she called Dr. Levitt. The evidence is very clear in the transcript that Dr. Theokarajan and Dr. Levitt, she called them because she believed it was a cerclage problem, an infection from the cerclage, not a delivery issue. She had no idea she was about to deliver a baby. And Dr. Wolanski, it was very clear, was her OB and had transferred the care for the cerclage and those follow-up issues to Dr. Theokarajan and Dr. Levitt's practice. So our position is, I think that it's very clear that we met the standards that had been missing in Dixon because we did provide what should have been done, which steps should have been taken.
So she should have been brought in on the 22nd.
And evaluated.
If she had been evaluated, she should have been given antibiotics at that time?
If the test had shown she was infected and everybody seemed to think there was an infection present at that time, Dr. Sajati said that, then yes, antibiotics. And they would have done the culture test to see what was the actual infection and what was the best antibiotic to address the infection.
So your interpretation of Gonzalez's testimony is that if she'd been there, been evaluated, antibiotics of some kind, single, double, triple, whatever, would have been given, and that would have by a reasonable likelihood, 51% probability, saved her life.
Yes, sir. Both he and Sajati said that at the 22nd. Sajati was less clear on the timing, absolutely later on the 22nd. But Dr. Gonzalez was also clear that she should have been brought in, had the blood work, and been given the antibiotics and evaluated upon the first phone call at 2:07 in the morning on the 26th. When she was complaining, and as Justice Miller pointed out, he told her to take the Advil, which reduced temperature, and then the nifedipine, which knocked out the contraction. So what he told her to do was going to mask the actual symptoms of the infection. So, thank you.
All right, call the next case.